majority of the film is new footage. I mean, there's the barber scene in there, and there's a few tiny snippets. But, you know, when Claude made Showa, he filmed more than 200 hours of footage. I think it's about 225 hours of footage. He kept the 10 hours or so that were used for Showa, and the rest of that footage he sold to the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, which has all of the tins of all the material that he shot, and they keep it in a warehouse in Baltimore. And so I worked very closely with them to restore footage that we thought could help show Claude's own story, because he's all over that footage. He's in that footage. It's his story. And I had read in his book about this encounter with Schubert, but I wasn't sure if there would be footage of it, and I was amazed that there was. But they, you know, obviously, they didn't really get anything out of him, and then the encounter went very badly. But to have that, and to have at a certain point when the van drives off and the antenna goes out of radar and we cut to black, and you just have the audio, was a tremendous find, you know? And a lot of people have said that it's kind of a terrifying center of the film, and that they find it very, very upsetting.
Well, it's something, it's amazing that you can find that, and that's the whole reason why, you know, certain docs are better than others, right?
Yes. So, well, I mean, I'll just give you a little epilogue then to what happened with that story. He threw the camera at them, and he managed to get away to the car. That slowed them down. They had the bag, the camera, and the Schubert family. They called the police, and they pressed charges. They said this guy, you know, came into our home and that. And when Claude got out of hospital, you know, he had this summons that they were pressing charges against him. And eventually, the charge against him was illegal use of the German airwaves, because they didn't have a radio license to transmit from the hidden camera to the van. So that was the charge against him. He wrote a very impassioned letter to the public prosecutor saying, look, you know, I'm Jewish, I'm trying to make a film about what happened. I've tried the normal routes to get Nazis interviewed, and they won't agree to talk. And this is the last recourse for me. Please don't press charges against me. And the public prosecutor was convinced by this argument and dropped charges against Claude and eventually returned the bag with the camera to him. But the condition was also that, okay, we return this to you, we'll drop the charges, but you can't use that footage of the Schubert in Showa. What's quite remarkable about that scene is that that encounter took place in 1979, right? And so it still shows you the attitudes towards Jewish people in Europe at that time somewhat, you know, in I think it was in Ahrensburg in Germany. I mean, here you have a situation where 35 years after the end of the war, you know, this isn't 1946 or 1947, this is 35 years after the Second World War, a Jew went to interview an SS officer and was beaten up, and they pressed charges against the Jew. I felt that on some fundamental level, you know, quite aside from this being a film about the Holocaust, I think that that in itself is something very revelatory, you know? And it speaks to anti-Semitism in Europe as late as the 1970s, early 1980s, you know?
Yes, and you can also speak to the fact that not only was he a Jew, but he was a French Jew.
Yes, he was a French Jew in Germany doing this work. So I think, you know, he had some reticence towards telling that story, and I think that he thinks that it's not a great story for him because it portrays him in a bad light. He lost the camera, he got beaten up, it was a real low point in the making of Showa. But actually, when you put it in the context of his achievement, your admiration for him swells when you see that story, when you see that he went through that, and he still carried on, you know. Claude describes himself in my film as being very stubborn, very meticulous. And I think that Showa could only have been made by somebody who was stubborn. I think that's a compliment, not a criticism. I think it needed someone who was tough to make it. You couldn't have been a shrinking violet. You couldn't have been a wilting, you know. He had 1,000 reasons to give up the film, and he didn't, you know, on making it.
And you also say that, you know, it was originally scheduled to take, what, 1 or 2 years and 2 hours?
Well, and when he accepted money, he said he agreed that, yep, it will be 2 years long. And I'll deliver it within 2 years, and it won't be longer than 2 hours. And he says, I knew that it was false. I had to lie to everybody. And, you know, that weighed on his conscience, because the people who he was taking money from were supporters of his, you know, the Israeli and the French. And, you know, he felt bad about that, but he felt that he had an overriding moral prerogative, which was to make the film the correct way. And the way that he saw it, there was only one way to make the film. That's what he says. There was only one way to make the film, and I had to find it, you know. And he felt, you know, that's a different kind of pressure that he faced, the pressure of knowing that, you know, he had to accept money and conditions to take it, but that he wouldn't be able to fulfill those conditions.
So how long, it was 12 years in the making.
Would be ready when you made it. Well, 7 years of filming and 5 years of editing.
But where did he get the money to keep it going?
He got some money from the Israelis at the beginning, as he says. Aluf HaRaven approached him and said, we'll give you some money. It was commissioned work, as he says. And then when that ran out, he got some money from the French. I think from Mitterrand, I'd have to check. I'd have to go back to his book and check. And then he got, you know, small bits of money here and there, you know. He was quite poor when the film was finished. He was hoping, his hope was just that he wouldn't have to live the rest of his days being completely financially destitute. So he really did pour everything into the film.
And like it said, it made him.
Yeah, I made the film, but the film made me, you know. And I think that's one of the things, is that you see that he, the mark that the film left on him, you know, even still. I mean, Shoah was released in 1985. He's made five films since then. And four of those have been made from this outtake, but same outtake footage that we use, about different characters who he interviewed during those years who were, he wasn't able to include in Shoah for one reason or another. The most recent, The Last of the Unjust, about Benjamin Mermelstein, the last elder of the Trajan Stadt Council. That was released in 2013. You know, Claude still is, you know, in a way, totally focused on this work that he began in 1973. It's become the defining work of his life.
Wow, it's like he's almost like a historian for the Holocaust, in a sense.
Yeah, but I think you can see the toll it took on him, you know, having been close to that much darkness for so long, all those years. You can really see the toll that it left on him. And he says, you know, I lived all these months after the end of Shoah like a bereavement, as a matter of fact. You know, he was with this thing for so long. He had a, you know, in a metaphorical sense, he had a relationship with this film. And letting go of it in 1985 must have been tremendously difficult, you know.